IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. So before we get started, I would like to give a shout out to Takshila's flagship public policy programs. We offer 1 year postgraduate program and 3 month graduate certificate programs in public policy in 3 different specializations. The applications are now open, and to find out more, visit school.takshila.org.in. So with that, let's get started. And so the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology has released the draft Digital Personal Data Protection Bill 2022 for public consultation. We've been waiting for this for a long time, and the bill is currently in the fourth iteration. And it's intended to bring in the much needed reforms that will protect the personal data of individuals. So my name is Bharat Reddy, and to find out more about this bill, we have with us Shailesh Chitnis, who used to work with a healthcare data startup based out of Bangalore, and my colleague Sri Krishna. So welcome, Shailesh and Sri. So let's get started. We'll first look at what are the changes that were introduced to the Personal Data Protection Bill 2022 from the previous drafts. So some people say that it's concise, practical, and implementable. And others say that the bill carves out many exceptions which could facilitate state surveillance. So Shailesh, could you just walk us through what are the different changes that have been introduced into this current version of the bill?
Sure. So thanks, Bharat. So I think, like you mentioned, this bill has been in the making for a long time, and we've been kind of waiting for something for this for almost, I think, 5 years since the original Puttaswamy judgment came in, right? And like you mentioned, there was a draft, a fairly comprehensive draft of a 2019 bill that was withdrawn at the last minute in August. And now this is the most recent iteration. As you've mentioned, this particular draft is a much more toned down version than the previous version. And that is, there are positives and negatives as well, right? So first and foremost, what are the changes from the previous draft? The most important change is that data localization, which is a pretty important objection for a lot of technology companies, that has been completely removed. So there is no longer a restriction or a requirement that data for Indian consumers or data for Indians has to reside in India. What they have done is they have come up with the notion of quote-unquote trusted geographies. And as long as the data resides in these trusted geographies, any requirement of data localization can be kind of removed. We can get to kind of how and when this trusted geographies will be defined, but that is one big change. The second is, unlike the previous draft, this particular draft does not draw any distinction between the types of personal data. So you can imagine your phone number being a type of personal data, your health records being a type of personal data, your bank records being a type of personal data. And if you think about it, each of them has a different kind of implication if it gets leaked, with obviously your health records and bank records being super sensitive. Unlike the previous draft, this doesn't draw any distinction between that. And there is no graded notion of security or compliance when it comes to personal data. It's all treated the same. Then there is a kind of almost like a formal recognition of what is called as consent managers. The concept of consent managers has been floated for a while, but this particular draft has essentially formalized the role of consent managers, which you can think of them as digital platforms that are registered with the right authorities. And through these platforms, the end consumers can give, manage, or review the consent that they give to data fiduciaries or third parties. So in a nutshell, I think those are the broad kind of changes from the previous versions. I think we're going to discuss some of the changes related or some of the kind of wordings related to exemptions, which I think have stayed the same, but these would be the broad contours of it.
So just to add on to what you said, Shailesh, so I think another major change has also been that they've watered down the provisions of the regulatory body, right? So the Data Protection Authority, which was envisaged in the previous version of the bill, was far more autonomous and independent. What we have now in the current version is a Data Protection Board. And just the nomenclature itself suggests that, you know, it's a board as opposed to an authority. But this has like real world implications, because the board is far more likely to be under the control and superintendence of the central government. I do not see, you know, the members of these board acting as independent regulators, but rather as an extended arm of the central government. Of course, there are concerns with this kind of approach. I'm not sure if data regulator, I mean, for any regulator in the country, it takes time for it to grow and build and become stronger, right? And starting off with the model of the board, maybe, of course, in the future, we'll see transition towards an independent authority. However, presently, the concern remains that we just have a watered-down board, which is regulating and administering this statute. Plus the fact that government is one of the biggest processors of data, right? So it is all the more important that we have a strong independent body which can hear and effectively enforce the provisions of this act against the state and its instrumentality. So that is one another change which I wanted to flag.
Right. So before we get into some of the concerns around the board and the exceptions given to the government and its instrumentalities, we can just double click on the data localization, the removal of data localization provision. So now this would come as a big positive for tech companies. So the bill says that the executive could at a later time decide what are those trusted geographies, and it's not written into the law. So it gives some flexibility to the executive. So what are the implications of this? Is this good to have a checklist of those trusted geographies? Would a negative list would have made more sense? As in, there are certain countries which don't have certain levels of data protection, and so we do not want to have data stored in those countries, or maybe we have some geopolitical rivalry with certain countries, so we don't want it in those countries. Would that have made more sense, or is it a positive checklist that the government could stipulate at a later time? Does that make sense? Because this kind of also gives the government leverage in, say, deciding which countries to, you know, not allow data to be stored in. So, and that could kind of be used as leverage at a later date. So any thoughts on this, Shailesh?
Yeah, so my own view on data localization, kind of removal of that, I think it's a pretty reasonable step that they've taken, because first and foremost, I don't think it was going to be practical from a lot of technology company standpoint for them to actually implement this, right? And so I think it's a reasonable carve out. Now, to come to your question, I think it's fair to say that this will be defined as a later date, because for now, as I think about it, the trusted geographies by all likelihood is going to be US, EU, things like that, right? And it's possible that, for example, they may explicitly mention China as one of the excluded geographies. So I think it's going to be something that they can define at a later stage. And as things evolve, they would also like the option of kind of changing that list as it were. So yes, it is tied to kind of what India's posture would be with respect to certain geographies, but I think it's a pretty reasonable construct.
Yeah, I'm with Shailesh on this one, in the sense that data localization was a very onerous requirement. And it was, I mean, the principled idea behind that was somehow India needs to maintain its data sovereignty over the data of its citizens and so on and so forth. And except that practically from a business point of view, it was unfeasible, right? So good that that provision has been kicked out. And it's also fine that the central government will, you know, from time to time, sort of notify the countries which are trusted geographies for India. The only comment I have on this one is that, you know, if you take a step back and see how delegated legislation typically works, right? So of course, we understand that the executive is in a better position to take these calls in different manners under different laws. So the parliament by law authorizes the executive to, you know, by notification declare some things from time to time. However, the catch here is this can't be unguided and unbridled, you know, delegation of authority to the executive. So the legislature is supposed to sort of lay down the parameters or the guidelines on the basis of which these decisions can be taken from an expediency point of view by the central government or the state government, right? So what is missing in this iteration of the bill is these precise guidelines which will determine whether India sees a particular jurisdiction as a trusted geography or not. It's completely left to the decision of the central government, and that can amount to something known as the excessive delegation of authority and may not hold up in the courts as well. So for example, like, there could be parameters for this, right? Like, one of them could be reciprocity. Now India will consider another geography as a trusted geography if it also allows cross-border movement of data from its jurisdiction to India. And a second one which I could think of was the level of data protection in that particular jurisdiction, right? So if it is equivalent to India or more than India, then it is fine to transfer Indian citizens' data outside the jurisdiction. So these could have been some of the parameters, or they could have been more. I'm sure we can come up with a lot more and more relevant ones as well. So this part of guiding the delegation of authority, which is being divested to the central government, is missing from the bill.
And to continue from the point that you made, so there have been some concerns about the delegation of this legislation to the executive, I mean, giving the power to the executive to frame rules at a later date. So some argue that a principle-based regulation is the ideal way to regulate tech, because things change so quickly, it's difficult to write rules for every use case that you could imagine, right? And so framing broad principles and then leaving the details for rules which could be implemented by the executive at a later date, that would be a much more practical and realistic approach to regulate tech. Any thoughts on this?
Yes, I can go first. I actually think this is not a bad way to implement technology policies, because if you think about it, the earlier draft had 90 plus or almost 100 different clauses trying to look at different situations and what would be the kind of what would be the regulation for that situation, right? But instead of that, if you take a different approach and say, these are the broad principles that we want to adhere to, and then trust, and that is again, in quote, trust that the Data Protection Board is going to be the enforcer of those principles, I think that lets them be more agile, lets them react to situations as they occur, and does not need the bill to kind of take into account every corner case that can occur, right? So I think in a principles-based approach, it's not a bad approach. There is still the big kind of elephant in the room regarding kind of the carve-out for government. But if you leave that aside, I think it's not a bad approach to get started with this bill, because we need something. And my own view is an incrementally good enough bill is way better right now, is way better than getting a perfect bill 2 to 3 years down the road. Because let's just get something going. We're going to learn along the way. And as long as the Data Protection Board or whichever the regulatory authority it ends up being is reasonably independent, is reasonably agile, I think we will kind of stumble our way to kind of a decent outcome instead of continued this iterative process.
Fair enough. So from a point of data governance, I'm completely with Shailesh, right? And I was just looking at some report, which I think actually counted the number of times the phrase as may be prescribed has appeared in this bill. And it's about 18 times, which means like a lot of things have been left to the government or the Data Protection Board to determine in the future as they see fit. And this might work perfectly well when it comes to, say, setting standards for data storage or setting standards for sharing of data and so on and so forth. Because these things, as Shailesh mentioned, are some things which continuously evolving. And so the authorities also need to be agile. But the problem is that some places this bill goes too far in delegating the authority. And precisely one of the examples which I spoke about earlier was also creation of the Data Protection Board, right? And this board, in fact, if you look at typically any other regulatory statute, you sort of have details as to the number of members who should be on a authority like this, on the regulator, the kinds of people, the experts, or should it be headed by an ex-Supreme Court judge or ex-High Court judge? What is the tenure of these people? Is it 3 years, 5 years? And, you know, how are they going to be paid their salaries and all? And these sort of provisions are hard-coded into the law so that there is an element of independence which is maintained. But right now, in this bill, at least, everything is left to be as may be prescribed by the central government. And of course, this is intended. Maybe they did not want to create a robust regulatory authority. They wanted a data regulatory board. But I believe these can cause problems later on.
Right. So we'll just take a quick break and we'll be back to discuss more about the concerns around the bill. So welcome back. And we were just discussing about the concerns around the independence of the Data Protection Board. We'll look more broadly at the concerns around the current version of the bill. So to start off with, we have the constitution of the Data Protection Board, and there are questions about its independence, given that the officers will be nominated by the central government, and it has very close ties with the current, with the ruling government in power. So given that, how independent can the Data Protection Board be in their functioning is questionable. And also, there are broad exemptions granted to the government and its instrumentalities. So the government agencies basically can ask for whatever personal data they would like and keep it for as long as they want and use it as they deem fit. And they can share it with anyone, all in the name of national security or maintaining law and order. So this is a lot of power to be given to the government, and the enforcing authority is also not, the independence is still debatable. So in such a situation, there are concerns that it could lead to a surveillance state and how it could facilitate all of these things, right? So Shailesh and Shri, what are your thoughts on this, and how do you think, could there be anything that could maybe have stronger checks and balances in place?
Yeah, so I think there are no two ways about it, right? This kind of blanket exemption that has been given to the union government, and not just the union government, but any quote-unquote instrumentality of the state, as they call it, be anything related to the state, they have been completely excluded from all the provisions of this bill. So I think this is too far-reaching, and all the concerns that people are raising related to surveillance or kind of the state overreach, I think they are valid. I believe the previous bill had some language related to the fact that the government would need to show a certain justification while accessing this kind of data, and that language has been removed. So I think it is reasonable that they need to kind of walk back a little bit. I don't see the current government, given their posture, walking back a huge way on this, but they would need to give something in return here and not make these provisions so broad. So that is number one. Number two is also the notion of deemed consent, which I think is related to this also, which is they have defined deemed consent for certain segments, which are very clearly defined, but then they leave a very kind of big door open by saying that they can deem the consent for certain situations, which includes maintenance of public order and in public interest, which again is very vague and very broad. So both these kind of clauses are, I would say, pretty troubling, and there would have to be some kind of a compromise on this. Otherwise, this could be pretty serious.
Yeah, completely with Shailesh on this point, especially because the actual expectation of privacy harm comes from law enforcement agencies in any jurisdiction, right? Because they tend to go overboard. And I mean, of course, the task they perform is also very difficult, and which is why all the more we should have clarity in law, clearly laid down guidelines as to their operation and the protection available to individuals and their privacy and data privacy, right? One thing I want to point out is one of the exemptions which have been given is processing of personal data in the interest of prevention, detection, investigation, or prosecution of any offense or contravention of any law. Now, this is super broad, right? This, in essence, I believe, enables a complete surveillance state, because the government can claim that it is acting in the interest of preventing or detecting or investigating any offense under any law, right? Like, it could be a petty offense, it could be some terror offense, could be anything. And interest of prevention and detection is essentially continuous and all-time job, right? It's not like they are surveilling for a specific intent and purpose here, but this could be very general sort of surveillance, which is carried out, a mass surveillance, as we typically call it, which is carried out across like time and place. So I believe the exemptions need to be carved out better. There is a lot of scope for improvement here. Of course, we can never say that there cannot be any national security exemption. I mean, that's a very impractical view to take as well. But especially given that this bill relies a lot on delegating authority, we need stronger provisions and more narrowly crafted exemptions in the bill.
Right. So if you look at the other legislations that have been introduced recently, so you can see a comprehensive legal framework being put together. So one would be the telecommunications law, then you have the personal data protection bill, and then you also have a Digital India Act to replace the IT Act. And so how would all of these work in conjunction with each other? Do you see any overlap or conflicts in what these different acts are trying to achieve?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things is, suddenly, I don't know whether it was by design or it worked out that way. Pretty much in the last few weeks, there have been like a flurry of announcements related to data and data regulation. So the first is, of course, this bill that we've been discussing. But I think last week, the TRAI, the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India, they also came out with their guidelines for growing the data center ecosystem in India. And as part of that, they've defined something called the Data Digitization and Monetization Council that would ostensibly be looking at ethical use of data by businesses and governments. So again, you can see that is very clearly in the realm of some of the topics that we've been talking about here with this bill. And so it's not clear what that overlap is. Is there going to be any kind of confusion with regards to who actually enforces certain laws? Or will there also be a conflict between how these definitions occur, right? So that isn't clear. And to be fair, I think the TRAI's paper was more of a proposal. So it's not really a law yet. But you can quickly see that there's a lot of action happening with relates to data, data protection. And then kind of tangentially, the Consumer Review Board, Department of Consumer Affairs, they also came out with a framework for safeguarding consumer interest using fake reviews, right? Which gets into the realm of online anonymization, using the right kind of you are who you say you are and things like that. So again, there are multiple conversations that are happening that are all in the realm of data protection, data privacy, online anonymization. And so it's not clear how kind of who's going to be the ultimate authority when it comes to that.
Yeah. So I personally haven't had the benefit of going through what the TRAI is proposing or the Digital India Act that you mentioned. But a very general comment here is that, the bane of India's law enforcement has always been over-regulation and under-enforcement, right? We love to write down all kinds of things in law, but it gets barely enforced. And by creation of these multiple frameworks, assuming what you said is right, I see the foreseeable consequence is something similar to under-enforcement. And this could also lead to turf battles between different agencies and, passing the buck from one agency or one authority to the another just to sort of evade accountability and so on and so forth. But that's a general problem of public policy in India.
Right. So as we, come to a close, what do you think of the bill overall and what can we expect going forward? So I think that as we've seen with GDPR, excessive or regulation might be hard to enforce on the ground, right? And you have a long tail of, so you might be able to get the biggest tech companies to comply, but then there is still a long tail of medium and smaller sized tech companies. And it is next to impossible for any authority or a board to, enforce these act on all of these companies. So maybe a lighter version of it, which is easier to implement and which is based on broad principles would be better. But then again, we need to have some checks and balances to ensure that the government the concerns about overreach are addressed and we don't end up as a surveillance state. So any closing thoughts?
No, Bharat, sorry, but just to pause there, I actually have a question for both of you before we conclude, right? So I think at the beginning, we were talking about the differences between the previous iteration and the current one. So one of the things which I sort of forgot to bring up there was the fact that this bill is confined to two things. One is it's confined to personal data and non-personal data is nowhere mentioned in the bill. The law does not aim to regulate it. And this could be anything, right? Like anything which is not identifiable to you in person, that becomes your non-personal data. But it could still be data which is sort of amassed at a large scale. And we know enough about big data to get the context, right? And the second change is also being that this is a digital personal data protection bill and not just a personal data protection bill. So this applies only to online data and does not apply to any kind of offline data. So these are the two things which have been running on my mind. And I'm just trying to think through the implications of this, is it a smart move? Does it leave a lot of data without any privacy protection? So I just wanted to hear the thoughts of both of you on this one.
So on the digital part, I think it's just the scale of the impact from having something online and what you can do with data that a tech company would be able to collect at scale. That is so enormous that maybe the aim is to regulate that. And when you have an offline data collection, say a bank collecting a KYC document or a physically scanned copy of a KYC document, so maybe that doesn't have the same kind of implication in terms of what a breach could mean. So yeah, that would be what I would think. Maybe it's just trying to limit the scope so that it can tackle the biggest problem first.
Shailesh, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, I agree with this approach because I think like Ashi, you mentioned, right, that the scale is going to be orders of magnitude more for digital data versus kind of offline data. Though to be fair, in India, a lot of data gets generated offline, even your health records and stuff like that. But what I'm guessing is when that offline data gets digitized, which means it either gets scanned or it gets uploaded somewhere, then these provisions start to apply. So I think if you look maybe 5 years down the line, it's not inconceivable that most of our data is going to be online in some form or the other And so I think that's a reasonable step to take. But again, maybe you need a different set of regulations for offline data, offline things. I feel keeping it simple, restricting it to digital data, lets you then have regulations that are specific to the characteristics of digital data.
Right, right. Yeah, thanks. That's some food for thought for sure.
Yeah, any closing comments, guys, before we wrap up?
Yeah, so I actually think, I mean, we've kind of gone through the pros and cons of the bill, and obviously kind of the big elephant in the room is the exemption to the central government, which is a big no-no. But if we leave that aside and hope for at least some kind of a compromise or some kind of a pullback from the government there, I think overall this bill is not a bad bill. I think we should kind of get started here. It's a pretty business-friendly or a technology tech company-friendly bill as well, in the sense that it doesn't bias it towards large companies that have the infrastructure to set up the kind of localization as well as regulatory requirements that was needed from the previous bill, right? So I think from that sense, it's a pretty good bill. All the language that was there in the previous draft around algorithmic accountability and things like that, that has also been removed. So all in all, I think it's not great, but I think it's good enough. And good enough is what we need right now, because in the absence of that, we have nothing. And we have no recourse. So my kind of assessment is, let's just get going with this bill and figure our way out.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Shailesh when he says that, you know, it's been too long. We haven't had a data protection legislation. Now we are just running out of time. And I think each day's harm which is being caused to individuals who are risking their privacy by sharing our data with these many entities all over, right, in the online and offline world. So maybe we pick up the big challenge, start off with this bill. Of course, I'm sure this will go through some consultation and hopefully more modifications and amendments before it becomes the final piece of legislation. But ultimately, this is just the beginning of the data protection regime in India. So it will take some time to build, will take some time of the judiciary as well, which will adjudicate cases, which will definitely go up before the high courts and Supreme Courts. And eventually, I feel we can move towards a more robust authority, a more robust framework. But yeah, like you rightly said, that it's been too long. And we have seen 4 versions of this bill and none of them have passed. And the Puttaswamy judgment on right to privacy came out way back, I think in 2016, if I remember correctly. And you know, the Aadhaar came in 2008, 2009. So it's been like over a decade and we still do not have any privacy protective legislation. So in that regard, it's a welcome move. But I would like to, you know, hold my horses till we see the final bill which is passed before the Houses of the Parliament. That's all, Bharat.
Thanks, Shailesh and Sri. It's been an interesting conversation and let's hope, you know, we can have more of these as the legislation goes through. And thanks everyone for listening in and see you tomorrow with a new episode.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.